The Kelly brothers have reason to claim expertise and creativity.
David Kelly designed the Occupied sign you see in every airplane restroom. He designed that while working at Boeing. Today, the Kelly brothers run the design firm IDEO. The company made the first Apple mouse.
IDEO developed and designed the heart defibrillator that talks. David Kelly founded the D School, D is for design, at Stanford University.
Tom Kelly is the author of the best-selling book, The Art of Innovation. Together, they've written Creative Confidence, Unleashing the Creative Potential Within Us. He started out by telling Ross Reynolds how he defines creativity.
Sure. Well, creativity is just the ability to come up with some novel or breakthrough idea. And people insist on defining it narrowly, like art and drawing and dance, and we think it can be applied to really any part of life, especially the work part of life. You can apply creativity in the HR department. You can apply it in finance. And so we think that the term needs to be stretched just a little bit from its traditional.
Part of what you talk about in design thinking is thinking of what I'll call the audience, or thinking of the people who will be using it. And there's a really interesting example you have of a guy who designed an MRI machine, and he was really proud of this machine. He was really proud of showing it off. And the fact that his idea of creativity didn't really fit with the user really came very apparent to him. Could you tell that story?
Sure. This is a wonderful guy named Doug Dietz, who worked for GE Healthcare, and he made a whole suite of medical imaging machines, MRIs, CAT scanners, even X-ray machines. And he always thought he was part of the healing process, and he was proud of his work, and you know, really rightly so. But he thought of his customer, of his audience, as the technician who ran the machine. And so he goes, after his machine was finished, he worked 2.5 years on it. He goes and he interviews the technician, and everything seems fine. Doug says, all of my questions were aimed at validating my new design. And so he says, yeah, I got all the answers I wanted. And he was about to leave just as a family came in. It was a young girl who was going to be scanned in his MRI machine, young girl and her mom and dad. And the girl is crying, and the dad is saying to her, now, honey, we talked about this. You can be strong, right? And Doug asks the technician, you know, his, quote, customer, he asks, well, what's happening here? And the technician who runs the machine now for the first time talks about something else and says, oh, Doug, you know, your machine scares the heck out of kids. You know, actually, Doug, 80% of the kids come using this machine in this hospital, we have to give them anesthesia, so that they can survive the experience. And Doug has this personal crisis, and he goes away. He actually comes here to the D School at Stanford University, where I'm currently sitting, and he meets all these other people from other companies and other parts of the company, and in that week of kind of exploring design thinking, he comes up with an idea. And he doesn't implement it himself. He gathers together people from a children's hospital and a kids museum. And he doesn't redesign the machine itself, because that takes years and has, you know, all kinds of approvals, regulatory approvals. He designs the experience. And so he covers the machine with decals, with bright colored graphics, that turns it into something else. And so he turns it into a rocket ship or a pirate ship or something. And then each machine of all the different technologies, each machine has a script. And so in the new script, the operator will say, "Now, Rebecca, we're going into the pirate ship today. And when we go into the pirate ship, you have to lie perfectly still, because you don't want the pirate to catch you. Do you think you can lie perfectly still?" And Rebecca says, "Yes, I can do that." And the rate of anesthesia goes from over 80% to something less than 10%. And so he used the power of design thinking to reinvent the experience of the machine.
Well, also, thinking about that little girl spurred his creativity in a different direction, away from the technology part to the way that little girl perceived the machine. He hadn't thought of that before.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I live and work in the Silicon Valley, where people love technology, and that's great. And you know, we advance things in that way. But if you start from humans, if you start from what people need, then you can apply your technology in different ways. You know, if technology were the whole story, we'd all be riding our Segways home to pet our robotic dogs. You know, but technology's not the whole story. You got to think about humans too.
You know, but in some ways, don't you have to forget about humans? Because otherwise you'll think along lines that people have already thought along. It seems as though creativity in some ways needs to leapfrog over what people expect or think or want.
Sure. No, it's a really important distinction you're making. What you cannot do is you can't ask people, oh, what do you need that you don't have? Wow, people are terrible at answering that question. They'll always say, well, I need what I currently got, but maybe a little smaller, maybe a little cheaper, a little bit faster, right? They won't point you towards the breakthroughs. And so you don't ask them, you observe them. You watch how people play their music. You watch how people check into a hotel. You watch people in the, you know, their experience at the hospital. And then you infer, then your observation, your intuition combine to say, hey, here's something the world needs, right? But it's not simply asking, because if you ask them, they will point you towards a really narrow solution. So it's the difference between incremental innovation that people can definitely help you with, or breakthroughs. And in the breakthroughs, nobody ever asks for a Sony Walkman or a Apple iPhone or anything. Those breakthroughs you get by observing, not by asking.
The essence of something creative is that it's new, or it's an innovation. It's something no one has thought of before. And your book is titled Creative Confidence. So is part of being creative maintaining that confidence in the face of people who are threatened by the new or think you're crazy because it's too new for them?
Sure. There's a whole chapter in the book about fears. And the biggest fear, we think, is the fear of being judged, right? You know, in kindergarten, everybody's creative, right? And there's no problem there at all. And then around the fourth grade, you start caring a little more about what people think of you. And sooner or later, and that happens for most kids by high school, if it's going to happen, you start to opt out. You start to think, I'm not creative, right? And as soon as you do that, your world gets a little smaller. And so it's been so much fun talking to people, these hundred people we interviewed, who as adults, they changed their mind about that. They decided they were creative. They gained creative confidence. And when they do that, they glow. I mean, it is fun to be around them.
I'm talking to Tom Kelly with his brother David. He's written the book Creative Confidence, Unleashing the Creative Potential Within Us All. Well, it's good to be confident about your creativity, but isn't confidence and creativity sometimes misplaced? You talk to people who are confident that what they've come up with is creative, but it's not really creative. Either it's not new or it's just not very good.
Sure. I think you're getting towards the idea of overconfidence. And in fact, what we're talking about, the creative confidence we're talking about, has a little humility built in. It's not the kind of confidence that says, I'm always right. It's the kind of confidence that says, look, I trust in this process. I have a creative methodology, and I trust in it even when I don't see the answer. I trust that if I start with empathy, and if I prototype a lot, and I learn from each experiment, and I keep showing it to people and getting their feedback and getting better and better and better, I believe I'll come to a solution. So it's not the kind of, you know, confidence or kind of sense of like, oh, I'm right all the time. It's kind of the opposite of that. It's this deep confidence in your ability to follow a process or methodology that will get you there.
Finally, Tom, I want to talk about collaboration and creativity. Creativity as a group process is what you just spoke about. But is there also an individual creativity that really does not rely on collaboration and working with others? Are these two different kinds of creativity?
Sure. I mean, there are certain moments in which you are alone and you have creative thoughts. But really, we think that almost everything worth doing in the world today is a group effort. Certainly, everything inside of organizations, be it business organizations or nonprofits. And I'm not even positive it was ever a solo thing. We've got that wonderful photo of Edison sitting alone in his lab, but Edison had this huge team of people in Menlo Park, New Jersey, who were doing experiments with him all day, every day. And so I think that whole lone genius thing is mostly a myth from the past, and not sure it exists much in the present.
Tom, we can't talk about all the ideas for building creative confidence, the title of your book, but leave us with one idea that people listening to you today might want to go out and try out to get their creative juices flowing.
Well, one very specific, very tactical thing is to try to figure out when you're at your creative best. Is there a moment in the day in which you reach this state that we call relaxed attention, in which you're working on a problem and not focusing on it intently, but just in a kind of semi-focused way? And so for some people, that's in the shower because there's no email in the shower. There's no People magazine, to read in the shower, right? And so absent those distractions, your mind is able to wander. And for me, it's the first 5 minutes when I wake up in the morning. And so I keep a pad of paper right by the bed to capture those thoughts. When the snooze button, when the alarm goes off and I push the snooze button, I'll allocate those 5 minutes to working in this unfocused, relaxed attention way on a topic. And I find I can really come up with creative ideas during that time. But, for your listeners, they'll have different times in the day that are uniquely suited to them.
Or if it's in the shower, some kind of waterproof thing you can write on the wall. So you'll.
Well, funny you should say that. My brother David, who I've co-authored with, he has a whiteboard marker. He's got his shower is glass. He has a whiteboard marker. It works perfectly. Wipes off afterwards. Definitely works.
Tom Kelly with his brother David Kelly. He's written the book Creative Confidence, Unleashing the Creative Potential Within Us All. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.